I'm David Conrad, your host for Lessons Learned, the podcast from Stream Digital, where we focus on the exceptional thought leadership and community service that defines the Suncoast's nonprofit community and its many supporters. I've been talking today with Bob Bunting, CEO of the Climate Adaptation Center, about his upcoming conference, Global to Local, the Climate Weather Forecast for 2030, 2040, and 2050, the reasons for it, and what we can do about it. Bob, tell us a little bit about the conference, why it's important right now, and what makes it different.
I think, David, it's because climate has always been considered a global problem, and we haven't rationalized it on the local level. What does it mean to us? How does it affect us in our backyard? So the whole idea of the CAC and its conferences is to make global climate warming a local issue and how it's going to impact us in our backyard. Because if we don't connect emotionally to this problem, we're going to lose the battle on climate change. So the conference is really built to first explain what's going on in the world, why we have a problem, and then immediately bring it down to the west coast of Florida, the southwest sun coast of Florida, from Tampa to Orlando down to Key West. And what are the impacts of the climate warming going to be on us? Most people think it's going to be 100 years from now, but I have news for them. It's now, and it's happening more and more. We've heard this year about so many disruptions going on in the world, and we're having those disruptions here. And we're focused basically on human health, on biodiversity, but also weather events like hurricanes and how they're changing, and how red tide, for example, is being enhanced by the climate warming. And finally, of course, we have sea level rise, which is perhaps the biggest challenge that Florida in general is going to have in the decades ahead.
So, Bob, talk a little bit more about what it really takes to inform people, but also to motivate them in the right direction to act.
Well, that's a great question, because I think we've always had this top-down idea that somehow the governments of the world, and especially ours, was going to lead the way on solving the problem. And I don't mean to disparage the efforts that are going in, because certainly more and more so we're seeing it. But in the last 50 years, we haven't made very much progress in that regard. And I believe it is because we're not experiencing the impacts on us of climate warming. So the CAC, the Climate Adaptation Center, really is trying to go from the ground up. What we're trying to do is translate scientific information into usable information for decision making, and to advance that decision making in all three sectors of our economy: the government sector, the academic sector, and the private sector. And together, when the United States decides to do something and put those sectors together, we always have a success. For instance, the development of a vaccine for COVID happened in record time when we decided to do it. So the key thing is we know enough now. We have to decide to act. And we hope to inspire that action here in our community where we live.
A lot of information people read is all over the map in terms of climate change. And I think folks, to a certain degree, aren't too sure what to believe, you know, or which source is the most credible and whatnot. Talk to us about why what you're doing is going to be clearer and better.
Well, I spent, you know, the greater part of my career working in NOAA as lead forecaster for the NOAA, which is our big atmospheric and climate service in the United States, and basically environmental information, and also being a director of the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder. And I've worked with many of the great scientists in the world over those years, and we have done a good job on the science. The science has advanced so much. But scientists generally don't take a role in translating that science into information. They think that's somebody else's job. And of course, what I'm telling them today, given the gravity of the situation, it's actually part of our job to make that translation because nobody else can really do it. And so that is one of the unique things about the Climate Adaptation Center. First of all, it's about local. And secondly, it's about making science useful so that we can actually use it to solve the problems that we have.
So let's talk about context. And earlier on, we were talking about how not only do you make this a local message, but you help with facts and statistics and information and some kind of a peek into history. You make this, you create context and you make it relevant to the people who are living here. Talk a little bit more about how you're going to do that at the conference.
Well, you know, we're going to take a little bit of a risk because this will be the first ever that I know of climate weather forecast. I'm used to making weather forecasts for today, tonight, and tomorrow. And everybody knows what those look like, and they're used to hearing them, and they know how to evaluate those. So we're going to put the climate warming we expect, that we feel like we have a good handle on for 2030, 2040, and 2050. And we're going to put it in the context, there's a 70% chance for rain. Are you going to bring your umbrella or not? And so we hope that it's going to be a prototype for other areas around the country. We hope to spread the CAC all over the United States eventually and give these forecasts so that people can then react to the forecast and plan what they're going to do, where they're going to buy their homes, where they're going to make their investments, et cetera. There's so many things that we can inform now with real information that has a high probability of happening.
So let's keep that going. What are some of the things that you want to happen or that you hope that happen as a result of the conference in terms of action or next steps?
Well, my feeling is we're really behind the curve on adapting and mitigating the worst impacts of climate warming. And we're seeing that in increasing climate disruptions. Just look at the hurricanes the last 2 years, right? Last year, we had a record 30 named storms. This year, by the way, this climate center forecasts 20 named storms this year. We've had 20 exactly, and we're at the end of moving to the end of the hurricane season, so we might actually have a couple more. But together, those two seasons are the record number of named storms, as far as we know, ever. And most of them are Category 4s and 5s and 3s, which used to be rare events. So now we're having major hurricanes more frequently, and we're having more storms. So eventually places like Sarasota, Florida, and Bradenton, and Key West, and Naples are going to be in the path of these storms more and more frequently. And I don't think we're ready for that. We have so many more people living here now, 1,000 people moving to Florida every day. Many of them have never been in a hurricane. Where are they going to go? What are they going to do? We don't have those answers. What are the building codes going to be to protect our future cities as we move into the 2030, 2040, and 2050? How are we going to maintain our beaches? Is every town going to have their own response, or are we going to work together in a community, in a bigger community, to have more regional answers for the warming we're going to have? It's not about retreating at this point. It doesn't have to get to that. But we must adapt and we must mitigate the worst impacts from these climate disruptions in the near future. And it's going to affect all of us that are alive right now.
So, Bob, talk to me a bit about how temperature has changed here in Florida since, say, the 1970s.
Well, it's surprising. You know, most of us who live in Florida now are from some other place, right? And we came down here because it was so cold up in the northern parts of the country. It's less cold there now. And, you know, we used to have 2 or 3 feet of snow when we walked to school, remember? We walked a mile to the bus and all of that. Those are true stories, actually. And the people today think that we were kidding when we said that, that we're embellishing those stories, but that's the way it used to be. And here in Florida, I don't know if you remember the last time it froze the citrus crops, but it happened every other year for a while. And now we rarely get that. And I'm not saying we'll never get it again, believe me, because I think we will. But some of the statistics are really astounding. For example, here in Sarasota, the nighttime temperature in summer is up more than 8 degrees Fahrenheit since 1970. 8 degrees! So now we're having temperatures sometimes at night that don't get below 80 degrees Fahrenheit. I mean, that's what it used to be in the daytime. So it's remarkable how it is changing and how all of us have gradually, gotten used to the fact it's getting warmer, and we don't realize how much we've turned up the heat, so to speak, locally.
Recently, Lisa Moody interviewed Elizabeth Moore, and she mentioned your event coming up on November 19th. How did you and Elizabeth get connected in the first place?
Well, this is a kind of an interesting story. I was listing a property that I own here with a realtor, and we were talking, and actually I met the realtor at a pizza parlor, and a year later I pulled out her card and said, oh, I think I'll call her and see if she wants to list this property. So anyway, I talked to her, and after about a half an hour, she said, you know, you sound so much like somebody else I know. You say the same things. And I said, well, who's that? And he said, Elizabeth Moore. And I said, oh, well, that's nice. I said, well, she said, well, I would like to put you two together. I would like to introduce you two. And I said, well, do. And so some time went on, and I totally forgot about it. One day, my phone rang, and I answered the phone. I said, hello, who's this? She says, Elizabeth Moore. She said, I hear we're supposed to meet each other because we care about the same things. And so we met and started talking. And then I decided to create the Climate Adaptation Center. And of course, immediately I said, Elizabeth, I want you to be a director, a founding director. And of course, she started clapping her hands like this, and she said, I will. So my realtor knows that I owe her. And by the way, it was the same realtor that Elizabeth was using at the time. So that was the connection.
That's a great story. Thank you for sharing it. So Bob, talk to me about the people who are going to be at your conference. Earlier, you kind of ran down the star-studded list. Talk about each of them and what they're going to bring to the conference.
Well, so we have our own staff, which is I think a significant staff of scientists. There's Robert Correll, who was the geosciences director at the National Science Foundation. And actually, he was one of the reasons why I ran the National Center for Atmospheric Research. And later, in 2013, he was in the group that won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2013 for their work on climate. So Bob is a national treasure, really. He's one of the great U.S. scientists, and he's had so much impact because he cares so much about how this science is getting assimilated by society. So he's right there with me, and we've worked together, you know, for decades. So Bob will be with us. He's on our board of directors, and he always speaks at the conferences. And then Dr. Stuart Waterman, who he and I have been very good friends for, again, decades. It seems like once we meet each other, we're so interested in the same things. But he graduated from the University of Colorado in working in the snow and ice data center there. So when you want to go back in paleoclimates and talk about how we know what the climates were a million years ago, Stu studied all of that when he was at the University of Colorado. So Bob is an oceanographer and atmospheric scientist. I am a meteorologist and climatologist, which is sort of a weird thing to have those two in one person. And Stu is a technologist, engineer, scientist specializing in the snow and ice. And so the three of us make up our science team. And then we bring in other people. We can bring people from all over, and we're doing it. Rick Newman, who is the editor at Yahoo Finance, is going to be our moderator for the conference. And he is an engaging, interesting guy. He's funny. He should be doing the Academy Awards. So I wanted him, and he said yes. We met on a fishing trip up in Maine this summer, and we got talking, and I said, "Oh, you have to be the moderator," and he said, "I will." So he'll entertain us and educate us. And then at our keynote speaker is a woman who is just an amazing woman. She was the administrator of the Department of Commerce, the assistant secretary, and she also was the vice president globally for Ford Motor Company, and her interest is electrification. So she's going to talk about how this movement from fossil fuel burning vehicles, which there are 277 million of them in the United States, and going electric, and what that's going to do to help us with climate warming. So that will be fantastic. And in the afternoon, we're going to have three panels. One is a government panel with local governments talking about what they're going to do about the forecast that I'm going to make at this conference, which I will make earlier in the conference for 2030, 2040, and 2050. And then an academic panel headed by the chancellor of the University of South Florida here in Sarasota. And we're going to talk about what education needs to look like to turn out the climate workers of the future that are going to jumpstart the climate economy, which is going to be the biggest economic thing that happens in Florida and I think in the world in the next 50 years. And then finally, we're going to put together private industry and talk about how we're going to finance all of this change. But at the end of the day, I'm optimistic in the face of some very serious problems we're facing. Because I believe that we're the only creatures on Earth that have free will. And once we know what the score is, we will use that free will to fix the problem that we created.
So, Bob, if people can't attend, if the seats are gone or they can't get in or they just can't physically be there, is there some way that they can get this information after the conference is over?
Well, there's two actually things. One is where we still have about two or three dozen seats, so that the people who get there first will get in. And you can buy those online on our website. But then we are going to announce a ticket over the internet. So we'll stream the conference, a streaming ticket, and those tickets will be $65. And all the money that we raise that way will help support our organization, and it's a tax write-off because we're a 501c3. So we'll do this all over the country, and there will be people coming in from every state because we want the CACs to end up in all those other states too. And so this is our chance to shine. But after that, we're editing each presentation into a single format so that we can get them out to teachers and we can have people see them remotely. They'll be on our website. Anybody can watch the whole conference or just one talk at a time whenever they want to. It'll be on our website, theclimateadaptationcenter.org.
I've been talking today with Bob Bunting, CEO of the Climate Adaptation Center, about his upcoming conference, Global to Local, the Climate Weather Forecast for 2030, 2040, and 2050, the reasons for it, and what we can do about it. Bob, thank you for joining today.
It's been such a pleasure, David, and thank you for getting the word out, because we do have a future if we decide to accept it.
Thank you.